My friend, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your help tonight. Genesis chapter number 3. I want to encourage you to be here tomorrow night. I hope we'll have an overflow crowd in the auditorium. I'll be preaching a Bible prophetic message right out of the book of Revelation. I'm going to be preaching on the subject, a bear dipped in oil. What's happening on Wall Street and in the capital of our country was prophesied over 2,000 years ago that these very actions would take place in this land. And I'm going to be dealing with all of that tomorrow night, a bear dipped in oil. Are we headed for hard times? Are we going to recover? Is this the last generation before the coming of the Lord? What else has to happen before Jesus comes? Is gold still the number one commodity of the world? I'll be answering all of those questions and many more. Is the Antichrist alive and well already on planet Earth? I'll be dealing with all of that on tomorrow night, and I've entitled it, A Bear Dipped in Oil. Please don't miss it. If you love Bible prophecy, you'll want to be here tomorrow night for the closing night of the meeting. I want to thank Pastor Watts and Brother Rodney for taking me out to eat today and taking the time to spend some time fellowshipping and encouraging me. Thank you, Pastor, so much for all the hospitality that I always enjoy here at Hilltop Baptist Church. I'm not a good preacher and I don't draw big crowds, and I'm just honored that your pastor would let me come and have the joy of preaching to this great church and these great people. And I want the Lord to bless us and help us and strengthen us together. 4 precious people have been saved by the grace of God this week, and they're in the auditorium tonight, and I'm so thankful that you got, amen, Brother Ben, raise your hand, I'm glad you got saved. And there was another Mexicano, amen, brother, 2 of you got born again, and I hope you'll go back to Georgia now, and whenever Latino you can find a Jesus, and get a green card for him as well. Are you, I forgot to ask you, are you legal, are you guys legal over here? What are you getting under the pew for, Ted? Somebody call I didn't think you had a green card. But you got a pale face, I'll tell you that much. Hey, Lord. Thank you, men, for coming. What an honor to have you all this week to be with us. In Genesis chapter number 3, we have a great problem here. Man has plunged into sin, and he is now being alienated from God for the first time. God begins to pronounce judgment on them, and he begins to explain to them what the repercussions is going to be because of their sin. Let me tell you something about sin. If you will look at it in the long term, you'll stay away from it. But if you address sin with only the immediate results, you'll find yourself falling into it over and over again. If Adam and Eve were to just stop and thought, the day you eat thereof, you shall surely die. If they'd have looked at the long-term effect of that and the billions of people that have had to die because of their act of rebellion, I'm sure they would have reconsidered. But they didn't look past the tip of their nose. All they could see was the fruit that was pleasant to the eye and one to make one wise. And any time you look at sin in the short term, it looks very appealing. But if you look at it in the long term and really look at it in all honesty, you'll find yourself wanting to deviate away from it and stay true to God. So God begins to pronounce his judgment on the devil, the woman, and the man. I'd like to pick up what he says to the man in chapter 3 in verse number 17. And unto Adam he said, talking about the Lord here, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. You need to underline that in the Bible. This is the first time man ever listened to his wife. Now, I know it's funny, but I'm telling you the truth. And this is the first time man ever listened to his wife, and it got him in trouble. Now, if you believe in the first mention principle in the Bible, that means there's a principle set forth whereby once it's executed the first time, it's consistent throughout all the Bible. So if that be true, that means anytime you listen to your old lady, you're headed for trouble. But let me move on, because some of you wouldn't say, man, if I had a gun against your head. He listened to the voice of his wife and has eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. Now watch verse 19. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. Now let me clarify that. That means God intends for man to work if he's going to eat. Some of you low-down, lazy, good-for-nothing, sorry, couch potatoes, bless God, lay up in the bed to 12 o'clock and eat Doritos and watch TV all day. God said if you don't sweat, you shouldn't eat. Amen, Brother Kidd, good preaching. I don't care if you do get a disability check. They ought to throw your sorry tail outside and shut the door and lock the windows till you get a job. You know, we preach against welfare for black people, but you bunch of white trash, all you want's a disability check, and there's not a bit of difference in it. Is anybody still with me tonight while I'm preaching? If you're able to work, you ought to shut up and get up and work. If you're disabled, I'm not against taking care of you, but if you're able-bodied, you ought to get up and work, and by the sweat of your face, that's how you're going to eat your bread. Isn't that what the Bible said? And he said, you'll do it till you return under the ground. Well, here's what he said. Now watch this theological statement. For out of it, out of the ground, out of the dirt, out of the dust, wast thou taken. For dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. If you will study earlier in the book of Genesis, you remember that God formed man out of the dust of the earth and breathed into his nostrils, and man became a living soul. I want to preach tonight on the subject, thinking about dirt and dust and the ground. I want to preach for a few minutes on the subject of common ground. In times like these that we are living in, we can see our diversities of individuality plainer than ever. Each of us are different in our approaches, our desires, our beliefs, our temperament, and even our goals. But in spite of our personal makeup, there are some things in which we find ourselves standing on common or level ground. At this point, to touch on each other's independence would only lead to confusion, debate, and contention. So may we all be found guilty of pressing toward the things in which we can all admit we have in common when it comes to the things of God. There's one thing I appreciate about the Lord. There's a lot of things I appreciate about Him. But He is not a respecter of person. That's what the Bible said. In other words, He views us all the same in Jesus. And so tonight, how many of you are hot in this building? Would you raise your hand? Brother, does the air conditioner work? It's up here. It's all up here. Well, that's nice. I want to get it nice and cool in here. Baptists are like hogs. If they get hot, they'll roll over on you and go to sleep. So most of us are fat. We can't bow our heads to pray. So if you don't keep all this cholesterol cool, we'll pass out on you. So tonight, I'm just in one of them moods, Brother Hawkins, so stay with me. So tonight I want to preach on some ground that all of us have in common when it comes to God. You know, we live in a society of status. You are in a stat according to how much money you have, how beautiful you are, the family you come from, what side of the tracks you live on. And all of us have the tendency to judge people according to stats. But I'm glad there is a loving, sovereign God that when it comes to man, it's all common ground. I want to show you three times we'll all meet God on common ground, and I'm done. Number one, may I say to you, we are all created from equal ground. You may obtain a bigger house than I have. You may drive a newer car than I do. You may be more attractive than I could ever become. You may have a charming personality that pulls the approval and the applause of man. You may own a lot of property. You may be financially secure in every avenue of your life. But you are no better than anybody else is in the sight of God. Because man at his best, no matter what he accumulates and what he looks like, he's still nothing but dust in the sight of God. And you may put a suit on it and cologne and cut your hair and dress it up and stay in shape and chew raisins and smoke tree roots and take vitamins, but one thing we all know for sure, we were all created from the dust of the earth, and don't you ever forget that. Dr. Seidler taught me years ago, every man puts his breeches on the same way. Now yours may cost more than mine, but you're no better than I am in the sight of God. That's why John said in the book of Revelation, talking about the great white throne judgment, John said, I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. You see, ladies and gentlemen, God is not impressed with us. I'm glad that red or yellow, black or white, everybody is precious in His sight. You say, but preacher, why would God love me? I have nothing to offer that others have. My family is in ruins. My life is destroyed. My testimony is in shambles. I have no money. I have no dwelling. I have no expensive clothing. I don't have anything to brag on. I have no accomplishments in life. May I say to you, God doesn't love you because of what you do or do not have. He loves you because of what you are, and you're a sinner. And God said, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, no, not one. We have all like sheep gone astray. And I'm glad when God looks in man, there's none better than the other. You're not pulling yourself up by your own shoelaces, brother, but it's common ground. We're all made out of dust. And don't you ever forget it. Nobody's better than you are. It's common ground in the fact that we're all created the same. Number two, we meet on common ground in that we all have an appointment we have to keep. Now here's what God said. He said, from dust thou art. But watch the conclusion of it. And to dust thou shalt return. Here's what God said. I breathed in you when you were dead and you got up and became a living individual. But just as that dust was formulated and became life, that dust will return to the dirt of the ground from which it came from. And it's common ground that we all have an appointment with our greatest adversary, this thing called Mr. Death. We shall all return to the dust of the earth because the Bible declares it is appointed unto man once to die. All living humanity must fulfill God's command to return to the dust of the earth. Your wealth, your strength, your security, your health will all fail us one day and give in to the call of death to face eternity whether we're prepared to or not. I remember some time ago, I was in Georgia, and just down the road from the church I was at was a funeral home. And I started embalming when I was just a young teenage boy. And I told the man that owned the funeral home, I said, my youngest son is thinking about becoming an embalmer. And I said, I've got a couple of nights. I don't sleep much anyway. I said, I would like for you to let me do the night calls. Give me a vehicle where I can retract the bodies, and I'll do all your night calls and embalming during the night. And so I went and got the vehicle, and sure enough, we started getting calls in the night. It was a large funeral home. And my son and I started going and picking up bodies and retrieving them to the funeral home. And I'll never forget, I picked up a 63-year-old man that had terminal cancer and had died. And it took a lot of work because of the chemo and the frailty of his body and the loss of weight. We had to inject tissue filler and things of that nature into his face to get it to look normal. And I remember working on him extensively because the family wanted an open casket. And I remembered I had to preach that night, so I went on to the service just a few doors down from the funeral home. And after service, I went back to the funeral home, and all the family, of course, was still in the viewing, looking at their loved one. And this gentleman had a younger brother. The man that died, his younger brother was there. He was a big, stocky man. He was in his late 50s. But he was a jubilant-type fella. He was the kind of guy you could see had charisma and personality. And he was younger than his brother that had passed away. And I walked in and I introduced myself and I got the family and I said, are you happy with everything? Is everything all right? And they were saying, yes, preacher, everything is wonderful. And thank you for doing such a wonderful job and doing what you did for our brother and our loved one. And his brother come up and put his arm around me and said, preacher, I'm his brother and I wanted to meet you and I want to thank you for helping the funeral home and my brother looks so good. And I could watch all the family. He was just the type of guy everybody wanted to hug him and all his nieces and nephews wanted to be around him, just that lovable type guy. And visitation ended at 9 o'clock that night. And some of the family decided they wanted to spend the night with the body, which is a custom that all the old timers used to do. But the funeral director that I was working with lived upstairs. And he said, Brother Kidd, don't worry, I can get them to leave. He said, if they say they want to stay, just let them stay. But I'll never forget when his brother was leaving at the end of viewing night, which is 9 o'clock, he shook my hand. His hand was so tender and warm and pink. And he said, preacher, I'll see you at the funeral in the morning. Thank you again for everything. And he left that night. Well, some of the family, some of the women decided they were going to set up all night with a casket. Well, old Brother Ivy lived upstairs in the funeral home. He said, I've never had a family spend the night in this funeral home. And what he would do, Brother Ben, this is true now, his upstairs where he lived, all the floors were wooden floors. It was basically an old manor they had turned into a funeral home. And what he'll do is about 10:30, he'll take a chain. It's about 8 feet long, just a towing chain, and he'll throw it in the floor and let it slide across the floor, and it'll hit that wall down at the end of the room. And he said, it won't be 2 minutes. Somebody'll be knocking on our door and saying, Mr. Ivy, we changed our mind. We're wore out, and we got to get ready for that funeral tomorrow. And he said, when they hear that chain drag across that floor, all of a sudden they feel led to get to the house. Are you listening to me? By the way, I'd go with them, bless God Almighty. But what I'm trying to say is this. I shook his younger brother's hand at 9 o'clock that night as he walked off the front steps of that large manor. I embalmed him at 7 o'clock the next morning. Brother Loveday, they called me at 5 o'clock and said, you have a body. I got my son up. We went down to the hospital and we picked up the body. And when I got to the gurney and pulled the sheet off his face, I couldn't believe my eyes. It was the same jubilant man that was shaking my hand at 9 o'clock the night before, full of life, full of enjoyment, full of love for his family. Now he lied silent and cold and dead on an embalming gurney. Oh, listen to me, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to die. Do you understand me? It's not a question of if you're going to die. It's just when you're going to die. B.R. Lincoln said one time, if I knew where I was going to be when I died, I'd never go there. Well, that's pretty good theology. I guess I wouldn't either. But you cannot run for Mr. Death. It's an appointment, the Bible said. Job said, there's a set time that you're going to die. Whether you like it or not, you are going to die. I read an article the other day. The man that invented the first health food bar. You remember when health food first started coming out? And this man invented this health candy bar that you eat. Now let me tell you the best way to eat those health candy bars that he invented. You open it up, take it out of the wrapper, throw the candy bar away, and eat the wrapper. Because it tastes a lot better than the candy bar did. And did you know not long ago, 55 years old now, the gentleman is, 55 years old, made a fortune putting cardboard into squares, putting it in the box and selling it as candy, was standing in a post office, just ran a 26-mile marathon the day before, was standing in the post office, 0% fat in his body, estimated he would live to be 109 years old, standing in line at a post office, had a massive heart attack and dropped dead, and they said, according to the autopsy, he was dead before his body ever hit the marble floor in the post office. I'm saying to you, I don't care what kind of health you think you're in. I don't care what kind of shape you think you're in. You got an appointment, son. You may break an appointment with a doctor. You may break one with a dentist. You may break one with a car dealer, but there's one appointment you're going to keep, and that is, we're all on level ground. We're all going to die. I was preaching in Florida some time ago, and I made that statement from the pulpit. I said, did you know the embalming fluid that'll fill your veins may be on the shelf in the funeral home tonight? And when I said that, a 51-year-old woman back here on the right, we were standing for invitation, she hit her husband, and both of them started sniggering. I was in the state of Florida, and they started laughing because I made that statement. I said, the flowers that'll cover your casket may already be in the flower shop. I said, the gas may already be in the hearse that'll carry your casket to the cemetery. And she sat back there and laughed and sniggered. The next morning on her way to work in a little S10 Chevrolet pickup, the sun was coming up. It blocked the red light. She went through a busy intersection. Somebody hit the driver's door, didn't even cut her. But it broke her neck, and she never drew another breath, and she died in the front seat of a little pickup. Less than 12 hours before that, honey, she was sniggering at a Baptist preacher because I said the gas may already be in the hearse that'll carry your body to the cemetery. I'm going to tell you something. This may be the last church service you ever sit in. This may be the last day of life you ever enjoy. This may be the last night you ever breathe God's fresh air here in the mountains of Tennessee. This may be the last time you ever sit with your family. This may be the last time you ever open a Bible. This may be the last time you ever hear a preacher preach. I'm telling you, you're closer to dying than you think you are. And when it comes to dying, it's level ground. Doesn't matter if you're a pauper on the street or a multi-billionaire. We are all headed for the cemetery. It's common ground. Number three. We're facing common ground in the fact that one day all of us are going to meet God. Here's what the Bible said in the book of Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27. As it is appointed unto man once to die, but there's something I want to remind you of. After this, after you die, after you're dead and gone, after this, the judgment. There's level ground, Brother Hawkins, in that one day we were not only given life, we are not only all going to die, but every stinking one of us are going to stand before God by ourselves. You're going to meet God one of these days. And the Bible calls him the great judge of the universe. If I was going to stand before a judge, I would like to have his only son as my attorney. And if you know Jesus, when you stand before God, you've got his only son as your attorney. And I tell you, the court's been set up. You'll be set free just as sure as the world if the judge's son is your attorney. Jesus will be the only thing that'll make a difference when you close your eyes in death. I've preached funerals of people that were buried in cardboard boxes, and nobody was at the funeral home but me and another preacher. And they buried them in cardboard boxes. I've preached funerals for wealthy people that had so much money, they buried them in solid bronze and solid copper caskets. Just, identical to the one Elvis Presley was buried in. $19,000 for a casket. Has an orthopedic mattress on the inside. Hand-stuffed pillows. The most elaborate interior that money could buy. It's all put on the inside. I've preached theirs funerals too. But there's one thing both of those individuals had in common. They had life. They faced death. And both of them are going to meet God. When you leave this world, honey, God's not impressed with what kind of casket they put you in, how natural you look, and how many flowers were sent to your funeral, or how many poems the preacher read before you were put beneath the sod. The only thing that's going to matter, sir, when you die, is that you've received Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. Many years ago in Holland, I met a man. Not long ago, that was a grandson of an auctioneer of the illustration that I'm about to give you that happened. It was in Holland. There was a very wealthy man. He was a third generation doctor in Holland. Him and his wife were married, had a big, beautiful, luxurious mansion, hundreds of acres of land, several different horse barns and horse farms. They had everything that money could buy. Such elaborate living that I couldn't even expel it in the pulpit tonight. After being married for some period of time, they decided it was time to have children. So it wasn't long until she conceived and they were to bring forth their firstborn. It was to be a boy, which would have been the fourth generation of the same name, and they were also expecting him to be a physician as well. But going through the birth canal and being born into this world, trouble set in. And in spite of all their medical attention, and in spite of all the wisdom of all the doctors, his beautiful young bride died on the delivery table and left him alone to raise a son. He had all kinds of maids, but he found a little old shriveled up black man that he loved. He'd worked with his daddy and his grandpa, and the old man was up in years. And he decided that instead of letting his maids and servants raise his son, he would let this elderly black man that he had known all of his life be the personal attender of his only son. Years went by and the little boy was raised in that wealthy home. The elderly black man treated him like he was his own son, of course. His daddy was busy in the arrangements of all of his medical fields and getting things set up. He never married again. And when the boy got old enough, the father had the professional trainers teaching him to ride the most elaborate walking horses that money had ever bought. And one day, while out in the field being trained to ride one of those big walking black stallions, the boy was thrown from the horse as a child. And when he was thrown from the horse, he fell off backwards and landed on the base of his neck. And it killed him out in the open field. The father went into immediate depression. Because he not only lost his wife, but now he's lost his only son. But what was amazing to this true story, Brother Watts, is 3 months before the boy was killed on that horse, the father had hired one of the most requested in-demand artists over in that part of Holland to hand-paint a picture of his son. It was full size. His boy was 9 years old when he died, and over the fireplace after his death, the man had brought the picture, and that hand-painted picture of that son was placed up over the fireplace of that wealthy mansion. They said every day the father was in immediate depression upon awaking from his sleep. Did you know, brother, he gave up his business, locked the doors to the manor, and dwelt inside of that thing like a hermit and died alone. He never left the home again. Upon his death, there was a problem. Because he only had one son and his son was dead, they didn't know who the heir was going to be to receive everything that had been left behind. Untold millions, mansions, horse farms, land, houses, servants. And so an attorney came and he found out that there was 3 stages into selling everything and auctioning everything off. And a man I met not long ago, his grandfather flew to Holland for this auction. They went in and it was a 3-part auction. The first part was very boring, and he said, in all reality, it was kind of embarrassing. Section number 1 of the will read this. I want you to auction off separately, before you mention anything else, the picture of my son that was painted. That picture, Brother Watts, was approximately the size of this banner here. So here's all these auctioneers from all over the world that have come to buy these priceless relics and vases and furniture and artifacts. And they got to sit down and wait for somebody to buy this stinking picture of a kid that nobody even knew. So the auctioneer got up and the attorney read the first part of the will and said, we must first, before we open up another section of the will, we must auction off the picture. And he gave the story about this being his only son and how he was killed. He said, do I have anybody that will open up the auction? Do I have a bid? And multi-millionaires from all over the world sitting there. Nobody nodded their head. They couldn't believe it. Nobody even offered a price for the framework. It was silence. But the little hunchback, shriveled black man that raised that little boy stood up in the back and lifted his hand. True story. He said, I got $4.19. And I'd like to have that picture because I knew him. He said, I got $4.19 and I got $5. Anybody else give me a bid on the picture? Come on, $4.19. Somebody give me a bid. Nobody opened their mouth. Sold to a little shriveled up black man for $4.19. The second part of the will was opened up and it was at all these artifacts and these vases and all the beautiful accomplishments that had come in from all over the world. And brother, they were sold for thousands and hundreds of thousands and tens of thousands and millions were rolling in and all these original artifacts were being sold and all this money was rolled in. When it was accumulated up in the multi of millions of dollars, the third part of the will was opened. This is what it said. To the one that thought enough of my son. To the one that wanted my son more than anything else. All the money from section 2 of the will now becomes yours because of your love for my son. You know what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen? I've got everything I'm ever going to need on the other side. Not because I've accumulated myself, but God has got it set up to give to all of those that love His Son. It's common ground. We're all going to die and meet God. And I want you to know for sure from the depths of your being that you know you've been born again by the Spirit of the living God. For we are all on common ground. We're standing with our heads bowed. Could I ask you the most important question? As we're playing softly and quickly, Brother Mike, I want to ask you the most important question in all the world as you stand to your feet, please. Little volume on the pulpit, Mike. Thank you, sir. Surely in a crowd this size, we can all confess that in life, it's common ground.